And I'm trucking on, I'm trucking on. Well, I'll move her on down the line. Another time will do me fine. I'm trucking on.
Howdy, friends, and welcome to Trucking On. I'm your host, Ward Richmond. I really appreciate you tuning in today, and I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody. Bienvenidos a Miami. That's right. I had a great week in Miami, meeting with some of my clients. Somehow I've manifested multiple clients that are based in Miami. Lucky for me, because I love getting to come here and really have grown to know and I love the city over the last several years since I started doing a lot of business here, or at least business with companies that are based out of here. So today, you're about to hear me sit down with Stephanie Rodriguez. Stephanie is an incredible human being. We only recently met a few months ago when she joined Colliers, where we now work together. And Stephanie oversees the 650 industrial real estate brokers in the United States for Colliers. So she's the head of our industrial real estate division nationally. And such a huge job. We get into that. And of course, we get into the stuff that's really important. And I can't wait to share this conversation with you. And I hope you enjoy. So let's go. Stephanie Rodriguez, what's up?
Not much. A beautiful day in Miami Beach.
Welcome to Trucking On.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You got it. I'm going to turn you up just a little bit.
I don't have that radio voice like you do.
I've been told for many a years that I have a radio voice, and now I got my own radio show.
Nice.
Trucking On.
Awesome.
With me, your host, Ward Richmond. Love it. So let's get into this. I'm so psyched to be here with you in Miami.
Yeah.
Your hometown.
My current hometown.
Your current hometown. And we're sitting here at the Miami Edition Hotel. One of my questions is, what is your favorite hotel? And this, I wouldn't say this is my favorite hotel, but it's one of them. It's okay. Just such a vibe here.
I don't know that I have a favorite. I love a Ritz-Carlton. I'm a little bougie about a hotel.
Me too.
I'm not going to lie. But the Ritz-Carlton in Fort Lauderdale Beach, which sounds crazy because I'm local, but the valet knows me by name. So that, like, I like staying there.
And you, like, stayed in a hotel last night because we had dinner here on Miami Beach. And you just grabbed a hotel here.
Yeah.
And you're a road warrior like me.
Yeah.
And I think when you're a road warrior, like, staying at bougie hotels, for me, becomes just critical. And I fly first class. That's critical because I'm too big to fit in coach.
Yes.
And it's uncomfortable and you get stuck on these planes all the time. I mean, I fly, I don't know how many times, but like 50 times a year or something,
yeah.
It seems like.
Yeah.
And I've tried it to like save money and fly coach and like cross my fingers for an upgrade. And then I'd get stuck in coach and we'd be like sitting on the tarmac for an hour and a half or something. And it's like,
and that's a good day.
It's yeah. And it's like not worth it.
No.
So bougie travel, we have a lot in common. Stephanie and I just recently met.
Yes.
Like 2 months ago or something.
Yeah.
Or whenever you joined Colliers. So we'll get into your whole background, but you basically joined Colliers. And we started working together in October.
Beginning of October.
2022. So this is now January the 12th of 23 when we're recording this. So I'm so psyched to have you on board. And like right when we first talked, I feel like we clicked immediately.
Yeah.
We had an awesome dinner in Dallas and now we're here and we had a dinner last night and we got another one tonight and we're doing a podcast. So I'm thrilled.
Great.
So tell me about yourself. This is your current hometown, but I really want to focus on like age 12 to 22 first.
Okay.
And what happened during those formative years of your life. Where were you at? Passions, any significant events that occurred that may have shaped who you became eventually.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in Pennsylvania in a very small town. So Hollidaysburg, Pennsylvania. Everybody looks at me quizzically when I say that because they have no idea where it is. But really small town, kind of a country girl. Just
Hollidaysburg.
Hollidaysburg. Right next door to Altoona, which is usually the butt of jokes on movies and in TV shows. So small town girl and...
Is that by Lebanon, Pennsylvania by any chance?
No.
My college roommate for 3 years lived in Lebanon. So okay. I've been there.
Okay.
And it's kind of a... Through Amish country,
yeah,
Pennsylvania.
So many small little unknown spots in that state. But I mean, I think it helped me become who I was, just kind of that small town vibe. I'm very comfortable in a casual setting, but then I'm also very comfortable in Miami. So, but I would say from like 12 on, so my parents got divorced when I was going into ninth grade. So that was kind of like a formative moment.
Yeah.
And that was hard. I think that divorce is very different now. Like you and I are both divorced.
Right.
And we have pretty healthy relationships with our exes and we're co-parenting the best we can. But I think it was a lot different then. It was still a little taboo. Not everybody, like I was one of very few people whose parents in my town were divorced. So that was like pretty challenging. And, but I think that really molded me into being somebody who had a lot of grit. And I sort of took that stressful life situation and put all of my energy into things that made me happy and brought me joy, because sometimes home life was a little stressful. So I was involved in a lot of different things in school, clubs, sports, you know, just trying to focus my energy on things that were positive.
Yeah.
You know, some you could go either way with that, right? Like you could go down one path and do things like that, or you could go down the other and get into trouble, you know, seek attention for the wrong reasons, things like that.
And we're basically the same age. We won't get into the details there, but
I'm not shy about it.
Yeah.
you may be. No.
No. I've mentioned it quite a bit, but yeah. And I mean, I remember growing up, my parents are still married and very few of my friends' parents were divorced. How did the co-parenting work back then? Because you and I are both very active co-parents, and I know your ex-husband is and my ex-wife as well. Like we're both involved in our children's lives quite a bit. Was that the same back then, or
one
side or the other?
No, I mean, I would say I was with my mom through the week and my dad on weekends. So,
okay.
I was with my dad on Wednesday nights for dinner, you know.
Just like
so,
a standard, like,
yeah, like that was just the arrangement. But, you know, my dad paid child support. My mom never worked outside the home until my parents got divorced. So that was like a shift.
Yeah.
And so then we became sort of the latchkey kids. When we came home from school, mom
no
usually
there.
Wasn't there. So now, because of my role, when I do have my daughter, I'm usually local that week. And I try to, you know, be working from home. So when she gets home from school, I'm there.
Do you go week on, week off?
Week on, week off.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, I think it's different now. I think we learned from our parents' mistakes.
Right.
You know, so maybe there was residual, I don't want to say it, anger or whatever between the two of them. So it made it a little more tense. I don't want to ever put that on my daughter. So even if I'm aggravated with my ex for whatever reason, I try to not let that affect the inner workings of those relationships.
I feel like divorce is just like, to a certain degree, like a marriage where you have to be conscious of it and pour yourself into that co-parenting relationship.
Yeah.
And like, you know, rise above quite often and from both sides. So it's a lot of work to be happily divorced, I'd say.
Oh, and, for sure.
But much respect. And I love to hear that, you know, that's basically how it's going for both of us.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that. So what was your sport that you poured yourself into or clubs? What, like, if you want to say your top ones.
Top, I would say like student government was one of them.
Were you class
like,
president?
I was not. So I was pretty upset because I ran for an officer position and these four guys in our class like, it was like a clean sweep, these four jocks. And then there were, you know, females who were also athletes, but also academically, like, doing their thing. I was in that group. We did not win.
Scholar athlete.
Yeah.
Females.
And so we were, you know, a little bitter, but all good guys, you know, we were, I mean, it was a small school. I had 200 people in my graduating class. So we all knew each other, you know, but student government was big for me. I was cheerleading captain in high school.
Okay.
Yeah. So, those sorts of things, ran track, played indoor soccer.
What did you do in track?
I was a sprinter.
Nice.
Yes. So, all the sprints, and I did jumping, so the long and triple jump.
Really?
Yeah. And which is something to be said because I'm 5'5".
Yeah.
So, yeah. I was a little leaper.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Love it. I was club president. I was the male jock.
Yeah, not shocking.
Not a quite a scholar in high school either.
So there was a Stephanie who was like probably pretty upset that you got elected and she didn't.
Quite possibly. but I you know, attribute it to my sales skills more than anything else, but I'm sure, you know, it didn't hurt.
Yeah. I think sales skills are directly correlated to politics. So
100%.
Yeah.
I think they're directly correlated to all things, is my theory.
Agreed.
Even co-parenting.
Yes.
Parenting.
Yes.
For sure, real estate, which is our business. So then you went to Penn State?
I did.
And did you look at other schools, or were you always kind of honed in to go to Penn State?
I looked at other schools, although last night I was sitting next to one of the guys on your team at dinner, to Cole, and we were talking about college, and I told him that it was probably in my destiny that I would end up there, because everybody in my hometown was a Penn State fan. Like, even if you didn't go there, or even if you didn't go to college, that was your team. And I'm sure it's the same in Texas and different parts. Whatever the local football school is, that's your school, even if you didn't go there. And I played the piano, so I was a classical pianist also.
Do you still play?
I do. I still have a piano.
You can bust it out. Like, if you're in a hotel lobby, you can go.
I'm pretty rusty. Pretty rusty, because I don't play as much as I should. But I had a bust of Joe Paterno on my piano instead of, like, Beethoven or Mozart. Yeah, Joe Pa. So,
do you know he went to Brown?
Yes, I know.
He set the, like, interception records as defensive back at Brown.
Yep.
And that's cool.
Yeah, so it was in the cards for me for Penn State. But I did, you know, I looked at Pitt. I looked at George Washington University, because I knew I wanted to study politics. So I was like, what better place than to be right in the heart of Washington, D.C.? Ultimately, I was paying for school myself, and GW wasn't going to give me a scholarship for anything. So I went to Penn State.
Were you a cheerleader there?
No. No.
Did you try, or did you think
I lettered in gymnastics.
Really?
Without competing. Because, yeah, long story, but I ended up managing the team the whole way through school, and I have a varsity letter to show for it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And then you graduated, and what happened?
I moved to Colorado with my college boyfriend.
That was a dream of mine to do. Not with my boyfriend.
I was just going to say, with your college boyfriend?
To move to Colorado. I went to Keystone, Colorado with my parents like weeks after I graduated from college.
Uh-huh.
And I had a job back in Dallas to lease office space set up like a month after I graduated. And I was there and I saw the people like working there as bartenders or river raft guides. And I seriously was thinking like, I need to just go do this right now. But I wound up wimping out, came home, took the steady job. But then, you know, we've discussed, I quit a couple years after that and went and played music. So I got to sow my wild oats that way. So how were you, a river raft guide?
No.
That was always my dream.
I worked retail and I worked in a brew pub.
Yeah.
So I was the dining room manager for a brew pub in Longmont.
Longmont, near Colorado.
Boulder.
Okay.
I lived there for a few years and eventually left and moved and found my way by going through Houston, Atlanta, and then I ended up in D.C. So I did a little bit of that, like my early 20s, no kids, not married, kind of trying things on for size.
Yeah.
I would say.
Were you doing like bartending type jobs in all those spots?
Yeah.
That's fun.
It's fun, but like when you have, like I had 2 college degrees.
Right.
And I was like, what am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
You know, I every day I sort of had that, this isn't terrible and I make money, but it's not ideal.
I feel that. I waited tables all through my band days.
Yeah.
I also worked fast food for a while at Freebird's Burritos, which is like a Texas version of Chipotle.
Oh, wow.
And that was brutal.
And I do you still eat burritos?
Yeah, I actually made my kids breakfast burritos yesterday morning before I came here. And I like always remind them, like, you know, I used to work fast food and that's why I can roll a badass burrito. And but yeah, they were like, roll faster, roll faster, roll faster. I mean, it's like managers. And I mean, I like have a college degree and I'd worked in commercial real estate, right, leasing office space for 2 years. And I grew up in the neighborhood where this thing is. So I would see like people from like my friend's parents from high school or like people I used to go to comp meetings with in real estate. And I'm like behind the counter rolling burritos for them. They're like, what is going on, dude? Are you okay? And, but then I got a job at a restaurant called the All Good Cafe and waited tables. I always say it's quite possibly my favorite job I've ever had. I didn't make a lot of money, obviously, but there's like a sense of freedom that went with it that I really valued. Yeah. And it was fun doing that. And I also think waiting tables is like the ultimate sales training.
It is.
Or bartending.
Well, life training for that matter. I mean, I think everybody should be forced to do it at least once in their life. They 100%. Will treat people so much differently.
Should do it in college. Should have it as a college course or something.
I mean, you just learn how to take abuse to diffuse a lot of different things. I mean, I personally get hangry. So when you have somebody coming into the restaurant and they're starving and cranky, I mean, there's just so much juggling. Oh my gosh.
You need help there?
No, I got
it. Okay.
I didn't work out today, but you know, I can open that water bottle eventually. But no, I just think it's great life training in general. So, so everybody should do it.
Multitasking.
Totally.
Like, and just like keeping your cool and selling. I love, when I first started waiting tables, we did not pool tips, which I loved because I'm a capitalist and always will be. So I would like upsell mimosas at brunch time and things like that. And I loved that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously, and you just try to get your tips up. And then we'd have these tip contests that I would always win until then we became socialists and pulled the tips. And that's okay. I survived. Yeah. It wasn't like that big of a deal, but I loved the sales aspect and trying those people that are hangry and you might even forget to put their order in, but then going to cool them down or something.
Yep.
Oh gosh. It was great.
Yeah.
And I always recommend it. And whenever I see on a resume of someone I'm talking to, if they have waited tables, that is like a huge bonus in my mind, knowing that they've been through that. Right on. And then, when did your corporate path begin and your...
So I decided that the hours in hospitality were for the birds. And I needed to get like a day job.
You were working until like 2 a.m.?
Yeah. And then sometimes you'd have to open the next day. So you'd get off work at 2. Then you'd have to go like unwind and decompress. And so all the people who closed that night would go to somebody's house and drink and hang out or whatever. So you'd go to bed at 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, at 10 a.m. you're back in there doing the thing. And I'd had it.
What age was that?
Gosh, I was probably 23, 24.
Yeah.
And I ended up in D.C. And I went to a Penn State alumni meeting, like just like, I think it was their board meeting or something, just so I could connect with some people.
Yeah.
And I met some women who were working for like a placement firm. And they knew of a real estate investment trust that needed some temporary help. So they said, let's send you there and see if it's a good fit and if they have anything long term. And so I went in as a temp receptionist. And the funny thing is, I had two college degrees and I didn't know how to use a switchboard. Like, I had no, I had never worked in that environment.
I don't know how to use a switchboard.
Right. And well, now nobody has a switchboard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, times but who have changed. Knew how,
no one knows. They don't teach you that stuff.
I could barely use a computer because, not to date myself, but I didn't have a personal computer at the time even. So it was a lot of learning very quickly, but after 2 weeks as a temp, they said they needed an admin to support some property managers and they offered me the position. So I had my first like real day job and I was probably 24 at the time. And it was at a real estate investment trust in DC, WashREIT is what they go by now. It used to be called RIT. And they were diversified. They had apartment buildings, retail, industrial, and office. And I was working to support two office property managers. And I did not have a clue. Like, I never knew about careers in real estate, right. You know? And I didn't know that anybody, you know, like you would see an office building, but what made it tick? You know, who took care of it? How did it work? I had no idea. So I was learning as I went. And I had a great mentor. Her name was Judy, and she was one of the senior property managers that I supported. And she just like coached me, mentored me, gave me projects with some guidance and like let me have at it. And that was just such a great learning experience for me because I could just kind of try. And there was never, she never made me feel like stupid or like I didn't know what I was doing. She was just really supportive. And she was really what the person who helped me fall in love with this business.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. There, you're, no day is the same. When you're in commercial real estate, you're typically, unless you're like an analyst, you're not stuck behind a desk. You're out interacting with people, which probably one of the reasons why you and I were in hospitality when we were younger is because you're interacting with people, all different kinds of people all day long. And that's what we do today. So that's how I started. So I really worked from the ground up, went through
100%
all the operations stuff. 6 years into my office operations side of the business stint in DC, I moved to Florida. So I've been here now for, gosh, since 2004.
With that company?
No. So that company for 4 years, Glenborough Realty Trust for two, a little over two. Then I moved here and went to work with Trammell Crow, still in property management. And then left there and went to CB.
Do you know I interviewed Trammell Crow's grandson, George Billingsley,
yeah?
A few podcasts ago.
Oh, cool.
So he's on the Truckin' On
awesome.
Team.
Yeah,
champions.
I liked it. That was my first foray into like the third party real estate services sort of world.
He went to my high school too.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Nice. But yeah, when I left and went to CB, I was amazed when all the people that I left at Crow, all of a sudden CB bought Crow and then they showed up like in the same office.
So you left to go to CB?
I left to go to CB and then within a year, CB bought, you know, Trammell Crow.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, then when I went to Duke Realty, which is my last employer before coming to Colliers, I switched from the operations side of the business to the leasing side, to the deal side. And I had no clue what I was doing, but like all these people within Duke were convincing me that it was like I had the personality and the temperament for it and I should do it.
Who, do you remember like specific people? At
yeah,
Duke?
Yeah. So my, so.
Did you get recruited there to
I
be
did.
Leasing?
No.
Or you were going to go just do your property management ops type stuff. And then they're like, wait a minute, like you've got what it takes to, you have this other part of your personality that can actually do this, which.
Yeah. No, I
you're not using right now.
Yeah, so that's how it happened.
That's so cool.
Recruited me to be the vice president of asset management and customer service. So I was overseeing property management for South Florida. And at the time, we owned 600,000 square feet of office buildings in South Florida. So that was sort of my realm. And then 2 years into that role, we acquired a 5 million square foot portfolio, which was predominantly industrial. And that's when they approached me and said, we really want you to do the leasing on this stuff. And so I pivoted, and that was a very scary time because it was a great recession.
what was it, 2009 or something?
Yeah. And 2009, they came to me. I started doing leasing in January of 2010. So we were basically paying tenants to lease spaces and renew. I mean, the rents were so ridiculously low. Concessions were through the roof. I had never had a sales position. So I really didn't know how to do the dance, so to speak. I mean, I never really negotiated deals. So I had to learn a lot, and I spent a lot of days crying in my car on the way home from work. And yeah, and I am a, like, on the outside, I can appear to be fairly tough, but that was a hard time for me. For 2 years, I asked myself what I did. You know, like, why did you do this, Stephanie?
What was making you cry?
I think, well, part of it was there was an expectation that we lease up based on a pro forma for this newly acquired portfolio, right? So you do your underwriting and you say, we're going to achieve these rents. We're going to get these returns on the assets. And all of a sudden it's not happening. We're in a recession.
Yeah. I just say that that strategy has always kind of blown my mind. It's like, what are you, a psychic medium fortune teller, to go underwrite what a building's going to do over the course of the next 10 years and then sell it like it's actual truth? Like, who?
But how else do you do it?
At a loss for words, but I mean, it's basically like you can either make it up or you can just say, here's what I have today and here's like the percentage chance that this tenant's going to stay there.
Yeah.
And then if it goes vacant, like, I mean, but to go like have expectations to meet this fictional story that right. some analyst made up to go justify buying a building at a certain price is also like, doesn't make absolute sense to me either. I mean, I get it. Like yeah. it's a little complicated, but I mean, when I look at deals, it's just like, what are the fundamentals here? If it goes dark, what are my chances to lease it back up again? And I'm very back of the napkin type of a guy, and all the real estate investment deals I've been in, which is not really that many, that's how I do it. I just look at it like, okay, this makes sense on paper. Now let's go.
Yeah.
And I know like banks and everybody needs to see all of this pro forma all laid out and all of these details and get comps. And I mean, getting comps now is so ridiculous because they don't even matter. As a tenant rep broker, it's like, who cares what the comps are? Because they're not going to be the same in a month from now.
Yeah, they're backward looking, right?
Yeah. And but the asset managers have to go get that for the owners to justify to their lenders. And it's all this like game of cards and paper pushing and bureaucracy or whatever. That's
creative,
always just kind of like
finance.
It's why I'm a tenant rep broker, actually, because I've like attempted to list like some institutional properties in the past and getting those phone calls like, what's going on here? What's going on here? What's going on here? It's like, what are you doing with your life? Like, stop calling me. And yeah. I like prefer to just go get in a deal and be working on actual transaction that's happening instead of looking in the rearview mirror to try to justify or guess what that might mean for the future.
Yeah.
Because that's just like one of my number one rules to live by is never make assumptions. And that's all you're doing. Like
yeah.
living a life of assumptions, and assumptions bring me in anxiety.
Yeah.
So anyway,
yeah.
that's my little tangent on that.
And, no.
But I've never been on your shoes and I can't even imagine. That would make me cry too.
Yeah.
I might like, you know, I don't know if I could handle it.
Well, I mean, I think it was that plus I had done a job in the operations side of the business for 12 years, something mm-hmm. like that. And I knew how to do my job like the back of my hand. And it was, I never had to think or second guess myself, you know, like it just was very natural for me. And then I was in this role that I was constantly second guessing myself, and I had, you know, these expectations I was trying to meet. And it was very stressful. But one of the things that I think has helped me in my career from the very beginning is that I don't like to lose. And that's even like against myself. And I have a lot of grit and perseverance. And I wasn't going to let them think that I couldn't do it. So I stuck it through. And then after a couple of years, it started clicking. And the deal flow, like I was getting in a rhythm. And, yeah. And then I became a deal junkie. And then
Amazon came.
Yeah, but you know, like Amazon, it's funny because I was doing deals in South Florida only. And because we're a land constrained market here, and because like there are plenty of other users out there looking for space, I never felt like we were completely beholden to them. I mean, they were our largest client. So of course we were going to develop buildings for them, but we had a little more bargaining power than some other locations might have, because it's like, look, if you don't take the deal as it is, we can lease this to somebody else.
Yeah.
So that was a nice position to be in with like this 800 pound gorilla out there in the market that everybody wanted their credit and everything else for. But yeah, I mean, it was a lot of fun. So going from the leasing and then I started working on the development deals, that was fun and frustrating all at the same time.
Right.
So
we were just talking about that before we hopped on. I'm in the midst of my first development deal right now. And what I've learned in the last year doing that, I can't even imagine getting to work for a Duke, how much you learn with the pros that are there and getting to go develop buildings. But wow. So you truly know everything from how to run a switchboard to build a building to lease it and sell it.
Yep.
Everything. And now you are at Colliers with me and you oversee our entire industrial division, which has what, 500 brokers?
653 and counting.
653 and counting brokers.
Yeah.
And I know I email you from time to time. I can't imagine. And Pete Quinn, your predecessor, is a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I would talk to him about this. And so now you are in the people business more than the real estate business to an extent.
Yeah.
So,
Right? Yeah. But I still get to use that real estate.
Yeah. You're in the real estate people business.
To advise the people.
Right.
Which is great.
But
full circle, right?
Yeah. So let's talk about it. Not obviously to everyone listening, but Prologis, the largest industrial real estate owner in the world, purchased Duke Realty last year, and that caused a lot of Duke employees to start rethinking what their next move is. And then your next move is to not go work for another competitor of Duke or Prologis, or go to Prologis, but go to Colliers.
Yeah.
And so now you're back at the third party provider and overseeing industrial. Tell me about how you made that decision and then how it's been the last several months since you joined the team.
Well, the acquisition was announced in June of 2022. And I remember the day I found out that it was going to be announced the following morning. And I have a place in Park City, Utah. So I really have the best of both worlds. I have a place in the mountains and a place, you know, theoretically at the beach. I don't live on the beach,
but here
I am. So
it's my dream.
Yeah. So I took advantage of that and really, I spent a lot of time over the summer in Utah kind of contemplating what's next. And I sort of did an inventory of what is it that I love about my job or jobs that I've had already? And what is it that I'm good at? What am I not so great at? And what do I not like doing? So I did we had a leadership group at Duke and I was in that small group and we had some executive coaching and all kinds of great resources thrown at us. And that was one of the things that they were sort of coaching us through this time to sort of do this assessment. And I spent a lot of time in the trees, hiking, listening to music and doing that soul searching. And I decided that COVID was terrible. I hated working by myself in my house. Like, I did not want that. I love working with people. I love connecting people. I like being a conduit to connect people. I love solving challenging problems. And I love being sort of the ambassador for a brand or a business. So, Julie Dunn, who is the market leader for Colliers here in South Florida, she called me one day and said, hey, this was in June, so it was within weeks of me finding out that I was going to be unemployed in October. She said, you know, we never backfilled Pete Quinn's position to head up industrial, and I think the job is perfect for you. And I actually had lunch with her yesterday, and we were sort of rehashing this, but yeah.
I've never met her before.
She's great. She's awesome. She is a hustler. She loves working. She has such a passion for this business like I do, so we really click. But so she sent me the job description, and HR contacted me, and we started the interview process. And I interviewed with 9 people to get to this point.
Wow.
But it was great. I felt like...
Were you flying to interviews or
no,
Zoom interviewing?
No, it was all Zoom, you know, and that was fine. Like sometimes I was literally like in workout clothes because it would just work out to... Like the first one was my birthday.
Yeah.
And I was hiking in South Carolina. And I'm so...
FaceTime while you're hiking?
No, I did it from my hotel room, but I was in workout clothes, you know, and because I didn't have work clothes with me. That was not the intent of the trip,
right.
You know? So, but, you know, it was... I wanted to go someplace where I felt like I could make an impact.
Yeah.
And really influence how we do things and how we grow business and have a really great reputation in the marketplace. And I wanted to be in a place where I felt like the culture was very close to what I had at Duke because I loved my time there. It was such a great ride. I worked with so many outstanding and smart people. And I knew a lot of people at Colliers because we had done deals together over the years. So I felt comfortable with the people and through the interview process felt even more comfortable with the leadership team. And when Gil offered me the role, I was really pumped. I had no idea in a million years that I would end up doing this job. Like it was never something that I even fathomed, but here we are.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so psyched that this all happened and the universe brought us together.
Yeah.
So, that's amazing. Okay. So backtracking to family life, how old's your
daughter?
Daughter.
She's 14.
Okay.
8th grade.
So you got married and had a child living in Miami.
Adopted.
Okay, adopted. Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
What was that process like?
It was rough.
Really?
I won't lie. It's hard when you're going through it. So I tried for years to have a baby and couldn't.
Yeah.
So we decided to go that route. And once we started that process... from the moment our profile sort of was like live to the birth parents for that, because they chose you as the adoptive parents.
Is it, was she born here?
She was.
In the U.S.?
Louisiana.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so it was about 9 months, like from start to finish,
you
which is strange.
Fill out the application, get it in, and then 9 months later.
Well, it's not that simple. It's a lot of like interviews with social workers, FBI background checks, like they check your credit, the whole thing. I mean, it is harder to adopt a child than it is to do so many other things.
Right.
Like it's really very... It can be expensive. It can be frustrating. I mean, we had one adoption that fell through. I mean, it's,
the emotions
I can't
even
imagine.
Crazy.
And then when you adopt the child, when you bring them home, you're so grateful to that mother or that couple, whoever was involved in that, for giving you this ultimate gift, right?
Yeah.
And then you almost feel guilty. It's hard to describe the emotions that you go through because this woman, she took care of herself and went to the doctors the whole time. And then she trusted us to love this human and provide for her forever.
Did you meet her?
Yes. I was
you
in
did.
The delivery room,
you
actually.
Were.
Yeah.
So she knew you like
she,
before?
Yeah, we communicated for probably 5 months before her birth. And then she stayed in touch with me for about 2 years, but has since not contacted me. But my Sophia is like, she's
your baby.
She's my baby. Like I couldn't have made a better baby for me. She's awesome.
I'm told my daughter Betty is my like partner in crime in life.
Yeah.
And my son Levi, he just turned 5. Betty's 8. So
uh-huh.
She, you know, when they get a little older, it's just. I mean, she's just becoming like such a real
person.
I know, but people tell me like when they turn 13 or 14, she's not going to hang out with you anymore or want to be with you. I'm like, I don't think that's going to happen with my kids. I like really hope it doesn't because I love that relationship. But you, her being 14, you're still,
we're still very tight.
Yeah.
We talk about just about anything. I'm sure there's stuff she doesn't tell me, but we're very close. We watch, you know, we always pick a series on Netflix and watch it together. Just do a lot of together things as much as we can. And she has a boyfriend now, which is freaking me out. You know, it's like,
what's his story?
He's a good kid, nice family. He plays lacrosse, so he's into sports. My daughter's super intellectual and creative, not an athlete at all, like hates even going outside. She loves gaming and she's super smart, like way smarter than me. And so like one night I went into her room and she was FaceTiming with him and trying to tutor him in algebra. He's a year older than her. And so she took algebra last year.
Yeah.
Cause she's that bright that she's in eighth grade and she's taking 10th grade courses.
Yeah.
And so she was like tutoring him in algebra on FaceTime. It was the funniest moment, but she's a great kid and he's a good kid too.
Very good. Okay, so as we move through this, I mean, I think we've really covered a lot of business. And
yeah.
I think your superpower is that you have experienced so many different aspects of all kinds of business, and especially the commercial real estate business. And now you're here and you're killing it. So I know just all the feedback I've heard from all my peers, and I work with everyone in North America, basically, the industrial brokers. And I'm on the steering committee of L&T, but everybody is like so stoked to have you on board.
That's great.
I definitely am. What advice would you give to your younger self?
I would say, oh gosh, that's a great question. Maybe to be more patient with myself.
Yeah.
I set my bar very high and my expectation for myself is probably higher than my expectation for others.
It's a high pro forma.
Yeah, it is. And I think that sometimes that adds stress to your life that you don't need. I just kind of go into everything I do with 100% passion and desire to do things well. And I would say be more patient with myself because I would get frustrated with me more than others.
Give yourself a little more grace.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I feel that. And then before we get into our rapid fire round, what would you say you would consider to be your greatest failure? And what positive thing did said failure trigger?
Oh, I don't look at things as failures.
I hear you. And I put the second part in that question, but every single person I've asked this question to, myself included, when you look at a failure, it's just like more like a mistake, I guess, if you want to reframe it a little bit.
Yeah.
But every failure, I mean, I guess you can keep failing and just be like wind up homeless or dead or something.
Right.
But most people, thankfully, that I run with, you're failing and learning from that failure. And then it's changing who you are.
Yeah.
And so it's helping you to evolve. But you can't evolve without some sort of, like, if you burn your hand on the stove, then you're not going to touch the stove again, you know? And that's just how humans evolve.
Yeah.
So I think, like, when I look at my life, I've had lots of major failures, but all of them have triggered, like, massive, like, jumps to a new level.
Yeah.
Which makes me thankful for that failure looking back. Even though at the time, it feels like it could be life-shattering.
Yeah. No, I mean,
sometimes.
I would say, you know, my marriage not working out is a big one.
That was mine.
Because, I mean, you do feel like you failed at it, right? No matter what the circumstance. Like, there was, I guess, a failure. But to me, it's all part of the journey. And I try to look at those moments in my life as a learning experience. And I did a ton of self-reflecting, therapy, and all kinds of stuff, like going through it before it, going through it, and after.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the best thing that I took from that was just... gosh, there's so many things. I don't even know, Ward, if I can figure just one. You know, things I took out of that are like, I need to be so present with my daughter. Yeah. I think when I was married and I traveled for business and stuff, I just kind of like let a lot of that fall to him. For me now, when she's with me, she's my focus. Like, it's 100% on her. So, and that's made our bond stronger. And I hope that it helps, like, influence how she becomes as an adult human, you know? That and just communicating my needs and wants. I was never good at that. And then all of a sudden, it sort of, like, erupted. So that's something that I pay more attention to now.
We have so much in common.
Yeah.
And yeah, you'll hear me talk about this in like this episode where I ask myself all these questions. And I have, I think, a lot of similar feelings about that. And yeah, I don't mention the being present with my children part, but that's something that I have to really focus on and conserve my energy, be it at work or like if I'm out of town traveling and I'm coming home the next day, like I'd somehow like think about in the morning before I get home, like, okay, like conserve your energy because you're going to be with your kids and step it up because it's real easy to go hand them their iPads and fall into my couch and watch TV,
totally.
which I do. Don't get me wrong, but when I force myself not to do that and like, let's go outside and run around or go, you know, go to the park or go bowling or something, like, then that it's very fulfilling.
Yeah.
So right on. Thank you for sharing that. And now I just have some rapid fire questions we can move through that I like to know because I'm passionate about all of these things. So I always like to hear other people's perspective on them.
Okay.
So if I can ask you, what's your morning ritual?
Oh, first thing, coffee. That's like a non-negotiable.
How do you take your coffee?
So at home, I take it with nut pods, which are unsweetened coconut almond cream. So very clean, no sugar. I just put that in there. And I like my coffee strong. So there's just a little
French
bit
roast.
Of, you know, I have an espresso machine.
Okay.
That thing is yeah. So that's first thing. And while I am doing the coffee ritual, I'm checking my calendar for the day, seeing if any emails came up overnight that I need to deal with. And then I work out. So some sort of movement.
You do yoga?
I do hot yoga. I do run.
How far do you run?
So I used to do a lot of half marathons. I don't anymore. I haven't been enjoying it. Like
right.
The heat and just, I don't know if it's because I'm getting older, but we're not going to talk about that. So I mean like 4 or 5 miles.
Yeah, that's a good run.
Yeah, and then I love strength training. Like I feel badass when I do that.
Me too.
Love throwing around a little bit of iron.
I used to run a lot. I can't remember if I shared this with you, but I did 3 Ironmans and... after the third one, I was training for the fourth. My daughter was born on the weekend when I was supposed to do my 4th Ironman. And so I stopped training knowing that that was coming. And when I stopped training for that, I started with a marathon, then short triathlons, then half Ironmans, then these 3 Ironmans. And when I stopped, whatever switch was flipped one way, got flipped the other way. And now, like, I don't run at all. I'll ride my bike with my daughter around the neighborhood or something. But I just, like, used to love it. And then one day I woke up and, like, no, it doesn't sound good. I love hot yoga. I love strength training.
Yeah.
Like, both of those things. Like,
yeah.
Going to a Bikram yoga class for me, or even, you know, vinyasa or whatever, heat, hot. I like hot heat yoga. when you get out of there, it reminds me of the same feeling as when you finish an Ironman, but you can do it in 1 hour.
Yeah.
Because you get to that point of suffering, like where they push you, like a great instructor, where you're about to break and then you make it.
Yes.
And it's like, now you get to chill. Yep. And that's like that feeling.
That Shavasana is the best.
Shavasana is like crossing the finish line at an Ironman. Every yoga class I go to, I get to go have my Ironman flashbacks in my mind.
Yeah.
That Shavasana. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay. Favorite hotel. We discussed that. You like the Ritz-Carlton's.
Yeah.
Any particular, and I mean, you love Park Cities because you have a house there.
Yeah, I have a place there. So that's my happy spot.
Favorite restaurant.
Ooh.
We eat at restaurants for a living, you and me.
So last night we had an outstanding time at Poppy Steak in Miami, but that's not actually my favorite steakhouse in Miami. I love Prime 112. Also a scene, but...
It's a little like Poppy Steak's like Miami on steroids.
Yeah.
And I booked that reservation and it's kind of, I like to go there because it's kind of fun. But actually last night it was so damn loud.
It was so loud.
That I don't know if, I mean, I'm not going to never
say. I thought it was still great. The food's
amazing.
Yeah.
And it's a great, it's like fun.
Yeah.
It's like Miami on steroids,
it
really.
Is.
But Prime 112 is so good.
Yeah, I love, let's see what else. Il Gabbiano for Italian.
Okay.
But Carbone, we're going there tonight.
Carbone tonight.
Excellent.
The Miami Edition concierge. If you ever want to get a reservation at Carbone, stay at the Miami Edition.
And he'll hook you up.
Yeah. I think Letty here in the VIP.
Okay.
Host area of the Miami Edition hooked this up.
Okay.
So, but they've hooked it up several times for me. And ironically, in Dallas, there's a Carbone and a Carbone Vino. And Carbone Vino is kind of like the poor man's Carbone,
as
some people might
call
it.
More light bites and wine.
They still have like the spicy rigatoni.
Uh-huh.
I've never been to Carbone actual in Dallas.
Have you been to the one here?
Yes, many times. Like, I can get a because I stay at the Edition and they get me reservations.
Okay.
But in Dallas, where I've lived for 44 years, like I can't get a reservation at Carbone in Dallas. So if anyone's listening and I just need like a restaurant reservation broker in Dallas specifically because I feel like I have such better hookups like in LA and Miami and New York, which is kind of hilarious because you would think it would be the opposite. But
the other spot that you have to try if you like sushi is Uchi
in
Wynwood.
We have an Uchi in Dallas.
Oh my God.
I love it.
Like that place, it just is so outstanding.
I
would say that's my current favorite restaurant.
Oh yeah. We've got to go there.
Yeah.
Next time you're in Dallas and next time I'm here. But I like to just go and just tell my server, like, bring me what you're feeling.
Yep.
And I don't ever look at the menu.
Yeah.
And they just bring it out. And then they're like, you good? I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah.
And I've never left there without a smile on my face.
For sure.
All right. Do you have a book? Are you a reader?
I am a reader, but right now I'm in a fiction phase.
That's cool.
Yeah. So last year I set a lofty goal of reading 50 books throughout the year.
We're the same, like I swear. I've done that. I never did it.
So
I couldn't do 50.
I got through 32.
That's
which
solid.
Is pretty commendable for somebody who's busy, but I read on planes.
Yeah. Is you actual reading or are you audiobooking some of them?
People tell me to do the audio and I just don't know why I haven't embraced it, but I just got a Kindle a year ago and I was hesitant to do that, but it's just so convenient because I can throw it in my purse and get on an airplane.
Yeah.
And it's like, I hated when I would get on a plane with a book that was like 3/4 of the way read and then I would need a second book on the plane to start.
Like 50 Shades of Grey.
Well, that's, you know, I might have read those, but a long time ago, Ward.
I read these books, but like you're on a plane all the time. It's like, no matter what book I'm reading, it's like, you know, people are like looking at your book,
judging
like
you?
Getting in your business.
That's why you need a Kindle because nobody knows what you're reading.
It's
the best. You're in first class. They're not that close to you.
Oh yeah. I get scowls every time I fly.
So I don't really have a favorite right now. I read a series. They're like fantasy books called like A Court of Thorn and Roses. Fantasy meaning like fairies and things like that.
Yeah.
Not the dirty one.
But. I'm a big Harry Potter guy.
Yeah, so they were really good, but I read that series, but it took me forever to get through it. So I blame that series on the reason why I didn't hit the 50. At least that's how I'm justifying it to myself.
Yeah.
So I've already finished one this year, and I'm well on my way. So
very cool.
On book number two already.
Are they gonna make movies of it? Do you think? Is it newer?
I hope so. I would love it if they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I'm super into nonfiction of late, like the last 5 or 6 years or something. Like I've just gone hard nonfiction.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like flying first class reading like a Tony Robbins book.
There you go.
Like seeing eye rolls come by me left and right. but when I was in the band, we would tour around and I would have to drive. I love driving. Long distances. So sometimes we'd like play a show in Chicago and drive straight back home to Dallas.
Oh God.
So like crazy long drives. But always like 4 to 5 hour drives almost every day. Like 3 if we're lucky. And John Pettigo, who was my first podcast guest, would read Harry Potter because this is when those books were coming out.
Yes.
This is when we were touring. So he would read it, but he would throw in like made up R-rated segments of interactions of the
twist.
Characters. And it was so funny. And I can't repeat what he said, but you can just
use
your imagination. Yeah. Okay. So we talked about you were jamming out to music when you were hiking around.
Yep.
I like to ask, like, do you have a song you would like to share or what's your music vibe in general?
I am very eclectic. I'm not a fan of smooth jazz. So that's not in my repertoire.
Me neither.
I listen to a lot of country and a lot of rap. So people get in my car and they're super confused.
Yeah.
Super confused, which is great. Like, there will be some hardcore rap playing and they're like, what is happening?
You like old school rap?
I do.
Me too.
I do. So like I have, last night in our Uber, I was talking with some of the guys and I was like, do you have like, I think I asked Zach, I'm like, do you have like a hype playlist? Because I'm big on making playlists.
Yeah.
When I was growing up in mixtapes, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I have one, it's called Girl Power and it's just like my hype playlist. But it has like Rick Ross hustling and...
They played Rick Ross last night.
Yes. Bitch better have my money. Like, yeah. So if I had like a big pitch or something.
I'm a boss. I like I'm a boss.
That's a good one too.
All I do is win.
Oh, that's another one.
I told you I've shared a stage with Ludacris before.
Yep. Yep.
DJ Khaled or whatever.
Well, he's a local boy.
Yeah, he is.
He's at all the Heat games.
Yeah.
Okay,
I think a friend of mine named Kat... who's a residential realtor here, like had something to do with the sale of his house.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I heard about that. But expensive house he has. Rick Ross, he's the man.
Yes.
I forgot to ask, like, do you have a quote you would like to share?
I don't think I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Not off the top of my head anyway.
I have quote notes, so I'm always trying to pick up new quotes.
Yeah, I think it depends on kind of the season of my life, and I might see something, and then I'll put it in a sticky note, like on my computer monitor.
Yeah.
But I'm big on community service and giving back, so kind of Mr. Rogers, like always look for the helpers.
Yeah.
That's something that I always think about.
That is perfect timing, because my next question is there a specific charity or cause that you support that you'd like to tell us about?
Yeah, I'm very involved in community organizations that support children who are either food insecure, housing insecure, in the foster care system, stuff like that. So my daughter and I do a lot of work with, there are some local organizations, Kids in Distress, SOS Children's Village, some places like that here in South Florida that we do a lot of work with throughout the year. And Collier's actually recently did a local, and their Collier's Cares November drive supported my holiday initiative for those organizations, which was
so
a lot
cool.
of fun. Yeah.
That's great. If you had $100 million in a briefcase and you had to invest it in one thing, what would it be?
I mean, this sounds really hokey, but real estate.
What kind of real estate?
Oh, I would diversify, I think.
You would?
Yeah.
I used to be very rigid when I first started this. Like, you have to pick like one specific asset class. And I think I even said that in the last episode.
I'll give you two.
Okay. You can give me two asset classes.
Industrial for sure, just because it's my baby and I love it. And I just think supply chain is so crucial to our lives every single day.
Right.
So you just can't go wrong.
You have to
have
it.
I mean, we need it forever and ever. And then I would go with some residential, but in targeted markets.
Like single family or like multifamily?
Maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah. Because you have to have a place to live too.
That's right.
And you got to have a place to, I've said this and I've said it in like seven episodes. So, but it never gets old because it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's housing and warehousing.
Yes.
Are the two most critical things. Office space and retail. Sorry, office and retail people, but
we're not in an office.
There
we're
are things that we can live without.
We're working on a terrace right
we're
now.
We're on a terrace podcasting. I was with one of my favorite clients yesterday by the pool down there having a meeting. And then we said, you know, let's go jump in the ocean. And we jumped in the ocean.
Yeah.
He goes, I love having a job where I can work and just go jump in the ocean. I said, me too.
Yeah.
And it's the life that we're able to live now thanks to technology and you know, being an entrepreneur and getting to do what we do every day.
Yeah.
So I have so much gratitude for this opportunity to be out here on the terrace.
Yeah.
With you. Last question. How would you spend your time if you didn't have to work and money didn't matter? What would you do?
I would do a lot more charity work, for sure. But I love to travel, too. So I would just like rent an Airbnb in different cities all over the world,
world
for periods
tour.
Of time and just kind of like live like a local. I like to do tourism that way.
Yeah.
As much as I like a fancy hotel, I like to do public transit. Like, it's weird because I don't do it here. Like, in my everyday life, I like getting in my comfortable car and driving myself places. But when I go to different places, I ride the buses, the trains. I just like going to the markets, doing things that all the locals do in their everyday. So I would do that. I would spend a couple of months in each spot and just really explore and dive deep into the everyday life.
Where would be your first spot to like go hang out for a month or whatever?
I love Spain. So I would go to some different cities in Spain that I haven't been to, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. And where do our listeners find you?
Well, I have a very active LinkedIn presence. So they can find me on LinkedIn. I have Instagram. I'm really big
Stephanie
on social.
Stephanie Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Do that search on LinkedIn.
Yeah. And what is my Instagram handle? Let me look.
Well, I know we're friends on Instagram.
Yeah.
You're a great Instagrammer. I'm on your Instagram feed today.
Yes, Stephanie_Colliers_Industrial. And then...
And we'll put this all in the show notes, everybody.
Perfect.
If you want to go follow Stephanie, she posts amazing content all the time on Instagram and on LinkedIn.
Yep.
And you'll probably see my picture in there from time to time as well.
And then Colliers website. I'm easily found on the industrial services page.
Hey, Stephanie, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Always great talking.
Let's go to Carbone.
Let's do it.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to this episode of Truckin' On. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, don't be shy. Please like, share, leave a 5-star review so that we can keep doing what we're doing. Stay safe out there on the road. Keep on trucking. Adios.